Here we go then, everybody. It is the big one. Welcome back to the Pinken Channels. Thank you very much for joining us. Happy Friday afternoon to you all. The weather outside is suitably gloomy. And we, of course, are looking ahead to the first East Anglian derby of the 2025-26 campaign. A trip across the border to Portman Road awaits Norwich City. Not just some championship points on the line for this one, a 16-year unbeaten record, everything that comes with it. This feels seismic, as it always does for people of both a yellow and green and blue and white persuasion. Hello, I'm Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Davitt. I've spent the last half an hour trying to come up with topics that we could talk about that aren't the East Anglian derby. We could talk about how we're going to spend our Saturdays or anything away from the football, but I think we are going to have to tackle it, I'm afraid. Paddy, first and foremost, how are you doing? How's your Friday been?
I'm having a good Friday, Connor. Hello, everybody. I've just had a coronation chicken sandwich from our canteen, and it was off the dial. So that's a good start to my day. I have a Yorkie bar. Other chocolate is available for this afternoon, so that'll sustain me through potentially. I won't say any more than maybe some Norwich news later in the day that we'll all want to get into, separate to the derby. Little teaser there, but yeah, I did see a tweet earlier on. You know, somebody clearly is at work and all they can think about is Sunday afternoon. So that's probably where we're all at. Luckily, our work is to talk about this game and this historical superiority, certainly since April 2009. The question is, and I want to hear what, not just you, Connor, obviously, goes without saying, but what our audience think this afternoon, where their head is at collectively. Is that run continuing or is it 16 and out?
Yes, get in touch with us, whether you are watching on Facebook, YouTube or on X. You can leave a comment and we will flash some on screen like we have got some already. I'm just trying to find one that I can flash up. We'll flash Joe's up, which basically asks the question, how is everyone feeling ahead of what is a big game Sunday? And you can let us know throughout the show, be it on just how you're feeling generally, but also maybe on how you're feeling about where Norwich City currently find themselves in. And of course, the nature, Paddy, I think, of a midweek game is, look, we don't get to dissect it in the same detail we do a weekend game with pods and whatnot, just time allowing and all of that stuff. So let's start with very briefly by touching upon West Brom, because I think we're both of the view it was an improvement, and Norwich probably, I felt, were good value, definitely for a point. I've seen some other people make an argument that maybe they should have got all three. I think that's probably a tad strong, if I'm honest. I think a point would have been probably a fair reflection on how it unfolded, barring obviously some fantastic, well, two saves really, wasn't it? The Makama header and the Sienats one in stoppage time. But we know the wider narrative, Paddy, and we know why the reaction at the end of the game was as it was. It wasn't for that 90 minutes against West Brom. It was clearly the four Carrow Road defeats, including that one in the Cup against Southampton, that preceded it. What were your thoughts, feelings, takeaways? I mean, you did a very good debrief on TikTok. Obviously, you can go and follow us on there. I think we're closing in already on 1,000 followers, which is absolutely tremendous. So you can subscribe to us on that platform. Definitely no dancing or any shenanigans. It is purely purely football. But yeah, Paddy, let's get your take on Wednesday night and everything that unfolded there in another defeat for Norwich.
I think you probably summed it up, Connor, for me. That reaction at the final whistle, and it wasn't by any manner of means, put it in my pointers, it wasn't comparable to the Wrexham reaction in terms of the boos and the fury and the frustration inside the stadium from the home fans who'd stayed there. So let's not draw that parallel. But I think the negative elements of that reaction midweek were not on the 90 minutes that had unfolded. Because, and Liam Manning references his presser yesterday, off the back of Coverway, Wrexham and then Stoke away, what we saw yesterday, Wednesday evening, that was, you can debate how good it's in terms of the list of Manning games this season, but it's up near the top. Maybe the response to that is, well, that shows you how low the bar has been, that and what we saw on Wednesday night was deemed, I think, fairly, in my opinion, to be one of the better outings, but only because there was something that changed in terms of in-game, in possession. He made a structural change with Cordoba coming in and Medic going out. That allowed him to play a higher defensive line. First half especially, they were almost camped on the halfway line, which then, so simplistic to say, but it then condenses the play. It allows your midfielders to be 5-10 yards higher, and likewise Sargent. That wasn't any coincidence. He had a lot more players in yellow and green shirts in and around him than he has in those recent games. So all of that allowed them to be better on the ball. They still lose the game, and because it's now four defeats in the league at Carrow Road, allied to another league defeat in the League Cup, five in total. That's, for me, where the source of that frustration was midweek. Not necessarily that performance in isolation, but because it continues this regressive trend. And for the vast majority of those Norwich supporting fans who haven't travelled away and haven't seen four unbeaten games and wins at Blackburn, and wins at Portsmouth, and then very hard-fought, resilient, battling draws at Coventry and Stoke, then you can understand it. You can understand why, you know, you're serving up more of the same and it's not good enough. And Liam Manning, again, as he did post-match immediately on Wednesday night, but also yesterday, he knows they're in the results industry and he is not delivering. He is failing. Him and his group of players and all the coaching staff are failing. Hence why there is this sense of things coming to a head, let's be honest, you know, and hope. If you're Liam Manning and Ben Napper and those individuals, that maybe Ipswich isn't a tipping point in terms of it going the wrong way. But it's noticeable for me now, these last two or three media touch points of Manning, this week, he's been asked about pressure. Does he feel he's under pressure? Well, you know, in what we do for a living, that's code for is your job at risk? Let's be honest. Let's get it straight. So the fact that the narrative this early on in the Liam Manning timeline has flipped to that tells you why this isn't going very well, why there is that frustration, why it's being expressed by home fans, especially, not all, but enough to make it uncomfortable for all concerned who were in the stadium the last two home games. So if that is the case, then this game does take on added significance because, you know, Norwich fans are looking for something that they can cling on to that is what has been badged this season is going to be. And if you go to Ipswich and not only lose, but the manner that you lose is unpalatable, then you can be sure that that reaction will reflect that amongst the wider fan base, the ones inside the stadium and the ones further afield. So, but that isn't to make this a make or break. I don't personally want to talk it up into that this weekend. You know, this result will determine whether Liam Manning's in the job come Monday morning, or even Ben Napper for that matter. I think that's, for me, being slightly over dramatic at this stage. But equally, another thing I would say about Manning as well, he's gone from at the start of the season in his media, a lot of his media was talking about, we can't be results driven. We want something that is sustainable, and we're trying to build something that is sustainable. And in the short term, we can't measure that by results necessarily. Well, this week, especially now, go back, watch all his media and count the amount of times he's talking about, we need a result. We need a result. This is a results business. We're in the business of winning games. For we, read him, let's be honest. So, yeah, there's no doubt that this is now reaching ahead, and Ipswich could either release the pressure or it could intensify the pressure. It's as big as that, really, in the context of Liam Manning, Ben Napper, Norwich, and the season that we were hoping this was going to be, rather than you see where it is at the moment. And okay, the away form is the counter to this narrative, but, you know, very good on the road in terms of resilient and picking up points, but not able to pick up a point or win a game at home, that cancels each other out for me. And now all that gets you is, at best, mid-table mediocrity. Well, that very much wasn't what we thought this season was going to turn into.
Yes, indeed. And let's be honest. The reason there has been intensity as well, particularly in the last week or so, has been this game on the horizon, adding to that and adding that intensity and pressure. We will obviously talk about, as Paddy has touched upon there, what it could mean on both sides, to be fair, because we could flip it on a positive side as well. If Norwich can go and get a result, then maybe it transforms their season in a very different way. But just on that point, Paddy, I mean, this game and the magnitude of it always adds a sense of pressure. And like you say, the recent run of form probably just as added to that, coupled obviously with performances and that poor Carrow Road form, the fact this has been on the horizon won't have helped Liam Manning, Ben Napa, the players, anyone in general, just with the mood and just with how the feeling is at this moment in time. Because as we both know, I'm from the area. You've obviously become an inherited Norfolkan. This is a big game in these parts for everybody, irrespective of anything else that's going on.
Well, it is. I mean, it's pride in where you're from. It's pride in your team, in a sporting, purely narrow sporting sense. It's pride in your people. And Norwich City represent Norwich and Norfolk more broadly. And they're one of the most visible symbols of that pride. And there's absolutely no doubt this isn't just 3 points. Anybody who thinks it is, and it slightly concerns me when I hear, and I heard it again yesterday, Liam Manning, you know, the players, and he's obviously talking about maybe the ones who've come in from overseas and some of maybe the domestic additions. They'll be fully briefed as if a document has to go round to tell them about the importance of beating Ipswich in East Anglian Derby. I mean, it should be implicit. You go back to Onel Hernandez, probably off the back of the Nunes defection in the summer, and I remember him saying a few things about, you know, the minute he walked in the door, whether it was the staff around the canteen at Colney or it was just generally people in the city, people were on him, and he was under no illusions almost from minute one what it meant to have the upper hand over, you know, your nearest and bitterest rivals. And so to hear that, you know, the players almost post West Brom may have had to, you know, just be told about how big it is, I was slightly concerned about that, if I'm honest. So, no, I mean, there's plenty of those players in the building who have been over these, have got a few scars along the way, and clearly, surely will be making anybody who runs out in that 11 on Sunday lunchtime fully aware what this means. It's more than a game. It's more than a game if you're from this part of the world and, you know, you zoom out and across the country, maybe people look at this derby maybe dismissively and think it's a smaller little spat over there on the east side of the country, and not comparable with the big city derbies. We can all reel them off. But when you're in it, when you live it, when you've been in as long as I have as well, there's absolutely no doubt that this result matters so much for both sides of the fence. And this is the intriguing one now. You know, it's from a Norwich perspective, it's almost a fear of being the first, and Liam Manning was asked about this, being the first associated with 16 years and losing that run. But I also concerns me that you look at it from an Ipswich point of view. If you're an Ipswich fan, if you're an Ipswich player, if you're Kieran McKenna, if you're Ashton, if you're any of these characters there, the desperation they must feel now, because let's get it straight, you know, the last renewal of this 2 seasons ago now, where those two clubs were, where those two sets of players were, Ipswich should have ended this there and then, you know, and we know that probably John Rowe's best outing in a Norwich shirt saved Norwich at Portman Road, because Ipswich were better, far better that day. Anybody recalls that game. Carrow Road, it looked like it was too much for them. You know, that was the Nunes free kick winner, and they were very inhibited that day, almost as if they couldn't escape the pressure that comes. And I think from a fearful point of view, McKenna won't make that mistake again this time around. I'm sure he would have been getting told what the derby's all about. He's now gone through 2 experiences and come the wrong side of it. So it does worry me that their figurehead now knows what to expect, as Manning should do with his local connections. Let's get it straight. But and I don't think that will be in Norwich's favour this time around. So if Norwich don't match that intensity, that fury, that ferocity that they will encounter when they step off that team coach, player or fan at Portman Road at the weekend, then it's not going to end well. And you know, I also tend to sort of blanch when I hear about, you know, our form goes out the window because it's a derby and it doesn't really matter. Well, if that was the case, then somewhere along these 16 years when Norwich have been clearly better, Ipswich would have managed to find a winner or find something to end this run. So the fact that Norwich have had this domination, it does tell you that it does matter, that you're going into it, you know, on a reasonable, you know, confident mood. And, you know, that's, again, a concern, because Carrow Road, as certainly in midweek, didn't set them up for what is going to be a Herculean task to try and stop an Ipswich team who, talking of form, you know, Norwich have lost 5 games this season, League and Cup. Ipswich have lost 1. So who are the two sets of teams that are going to go and approach this game in a better frame of mind? So there's so many cards against Manning and this Norwich team. But also, you know, the final thing I'll say in this segment is if you're Liam Manning and he's astute enough character to use this, you internalise that as the siege mentality, that nobody really externally, even maybe in our own fan base, believes we can go there and get a result. Let's go and show a few people wrong. Let's prove a few people wrong. Let's use that to galvanise us. And then we'll get back on that coach and hopefully they've got a positive result. And who knows what that can then unleash for the rest of this season. It could be the spark. Let's get it straight.
I'm glad you said there about the form point, because I was going to raise that. I know that's a bit cliche, isn't it? Form goes out of the window. And to an extent, that's true. Ewan was speaking on Radio Norfolk. Ewan Roberts, of course, was speaking on Radio Norfolk the other day about an occasion where I think they'd lost a few games, Norwich, heading to Portman Road, and Ipswich were flying at the time. And they went there and managed to win 2-0, I think. Someone will have to comment the year that was. So there is precedent for that happening. Like you say, last time at Carrow Road, where Ipswich were gunning for Premier League promotion and obviously went on to get that. They were undoubtedly the favourites for that game. And as you mapped out, Paddy, were unable to do it. One thing I did want to kind of squash, because I've seen this in a few places around the 2-2 last time around. I've seen a few people say, well, it's kind of similar. Norwich didn't go into that one in the best of form. And I would agree generally there probably wasn't the best mood around the place. But I'm going to flash up the six results heading into that derby. So you can read that here. Hopefully you can see that. Starting from obviously what was that Cardiff win, which clearly transformed for David Wagner, that transformed it, didn't it? That comeback away at Cardiff. They then beat QPR. There was the defeat to Watford. The win over Bristol City. I think that was Liam Manning's Bristol City at the time when Adam Eder scored a late winner. Then there was a 0-0 with Preston. Then they beat Sheffield Wednesday. And then there was the Ipswich game. So the mood might not have been great, but actually the form was four wins from six, Paddy. And that kind of backs up your point around this, because the last time Norwich went to Portman Road, even though the mood might have been in a place, and there was certainly talk around David Wagner at that time and the narrative around him, actually the form of Norwich City was very different. It was almost probably the start of where they began to turn that season around. And that just isn't the case. Norwich don't have that foundation of form and wins and points and results, even necessarily without performances, to take into this game.
Well, yes and no, Connor, because where is this game being played this weekend? It's an away game. Look at Norwich's last four away games this season. I know it's very overly clinical to separate out. We won't worry about Carrow Road and what they're not doing there and how terrible that is and their lack of productivity and the frustration, because you can't overlook any of that. But purely in terms of this is the next in the link of away games this season for this head coach and group of players, they're unbeaten. Have they probably merited being unbeaten? No. They were very fortunate in Coventry. They were very fortunate in Stoke. Even the Portsmouth and Blackburn games, both of those, they had to navigate some very uncomfortable periods in the second half, even though Blackburn had a player sent off at Ewood. But in the round, it is four unbeaten games away from home where they've faced adversity, a lot of it, too much, let's be honest. They haven't had that control of the ball, really, over the entirety of those four games. But every time they've got back on a team coach, they've got something to show for their efforts. And I think it's 8 points, isn't it, from that haul, two wins and two draws. So going away again, it might not be the worst scenario, because if you're Liam Manning, you say, well, you know, this challenge in front of us, it's obviously amplified because it's Ipswich and all that goes with it, clearly. But you strip it back and it's another challenge where you've got to go away from home. You're going to have the majority of the crowd against you. You're going to have to deal with a home team, more so with Ipswich, probably going to be ferocious in their intent and on the front foot and try and pin you back and try and impose their game onto you. But they've had all those elements at Portsmouth, Blackburn, Coventry, Stoke. And by hook or by crook, they've managed to find a way. And by no manner of means, that is the challenge for Manning this weekend. Find a way. Even if, and it'd be interesting to get the thoughts, I mean, even if it was another Coventry / Stoke type performance, I mean, that'd do nothing for the heart rate, I'm sure, or the sense of you know, fear and trepidation as each minute elapsed. If it was just simply Darling and his mates camped on the edge of their own box, desperately trying to keep the ball out of Kovacevic's net. But if it was that and it got them a result, I'd be surprised if there was too many Norwich fans where we're feeling at the moment would reject that scenario. they take it and worry about, right, well, now it needs to come together in all those other elements that we've discussed liberally on various platforms in the last week or two. But they'd have 2 weeks, of course, another international break to maybe try and find something and then reemerge for the Liam Manning derby, which is Bristol City at home, I think, on the other side of the international break coming up. I think the points we're making about form are relevant in the context of a derby. But I'd also caution, maybe for this one, we can dial down the Carrow Road angst and amp up, you know, what they have done away from home. Whether they've deserved 8 points and four unbeaten games, I don't think you could say they have necessarily. But you know, if a derby is about you, whether you deserve it or not, you get something. Then that's a good trait to cling on to, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. It's probably the one game, isn't it, where very little will care about the performance if it ends up with any kind of result. And I think this point from Bish is a good one on YouTube. Sorry, Pad, just to flash the one up before that. I think he's right, because as much as we kind of talk about what could happen and the fallout of this from a negative perspective, and look, we will do that in a moment, no doubt. But flip it from a positive perspective. They, as we said, the performance on Wednesday wasn't too bad. I know they got beat ultimately, and the Carrow Road run is very poor. But if they could get a result, and if they could produce a performance and marry the two together in this game, as we say, the biggest of them all, if you're anyone to do with Norwich City, it can transform your season. It could really be the springboard that they need to push on to what is international break. You have a couple of weeks, you say, to regroup, to work through why this block was the way it was. And then you've got a block of games there. And look, I don't want to say this in terms of the Championship, because it's a difficult league. There aren't any favourable games earlier, but certainly feels like a run of five games that you could really attack with from a Norwich City perspective. And it would just feel quite unifying. It would have, I guess, almost a similar effect to that Blackburn win before the last international break, if they could do that. So it feels like, probably both positively and negatively, the stakes this weekend, and to be fair, they always are with a derby because everything is heightened. But with this one, they feel especially big if Norwich City could get on the right side of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And we're probably maybe merging it in the cliche territory about can one game actually tilt the trajectory of a 46-game season? It seems attaching far too much significance to one game or one afternoon or one event. But as you're talking about that, as Neil says, just don't lose. Yeah. But as you were talking there, Connor, I'm thinking, well, Farker 18-19 was Middlesbrough at home. I think after the September international break, you look back now and all that season contained. And it was maybe for me, that was the turning point, because that was obviously Pookie down the middle and 1-0 Pookie also as well. Actually, if I think about it, more relevant is Farker going to Portman Road, the Max Aaron's first game as well, a little first league start, should I say. You know, I don't think it's real history to say he loses that game. He might not have remained in charge, because it came off the back of the 17-18 15th place finish below Ipswich for the first time in a long time at that point. And then the derby, I think, was early on the following season. So he gets a result there, follows it up with that Middlesbrough game, and on we go. Even more recently, the Wagner season, where they got into the playoffs. I think if you go back to that January game when Sargent, who'd been out for a period of time, came back, it was the Russell Martin Southampton. They had a ridiculously low amount of possession. It was about 25% possession. Yep. At Carrow, probably never been seen before or since. But Josh Sargent got them out of jail that day, and they got a draw. And you saw how they finished the second half of that season, you know, on the back of Sargent's goal scoring, and got themselves into the playoffs. And that didn't look probable pre-Christmas. There was Sargent sidelined and that team struggling to find something. So, yeah, I think it's plausible to suggest that you know, you do, as that comment that you flashed up, you get a result on Sunday. It doesn't mask or paper over all the issues that are there, and they're visible and we can all feel them externally and internally. But it just gives them some breathing space, doesn't it? You know, metaphorically, to then take stock again over these next 2 week period. As Liam said yesterday, you know, hopefully in this period now, there's another group of injured players currently come back into contention, Chris Garden and Krizeni primarily, one or two others. And obviously, they need to keep the rest of them fit. That's the other challenge. But then he starts to get more and more options that they can, you know, kick on, as you say, then, and then roll it on, find that consistency on the ball particularly, and let's see where they are then when we get to Christmas. That's I'm sure, if you're Liam Manning and his coaching staff, you're viewing it in that focus rather than, you know, heaven forbid, the alternative, which is they go get a Sunday, they get beat, they are so far off it, maybe, you know, even reaching embarrassment levels, then it's a very, 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 very different narrative, I'm afraid, for him and for maybe even for Ben Napper.
And that is the flip side that I was going to come on to. We've spoken about it in a positive sense. If it doesn't do that, it's going to be tough, isn't it? You think about the fan mood at the moment, where things are at, the results that they've had, as you mentioned, five defeats already in the opening, 10 games or so they've had in all competitions, half of those. If that was to become six, Paddy, and you look at the championship table and you would expect them probably to be even closer to the bottom three than they are at the moment heading into the October international break. I think everyone knows that there are going to be serious questions asked about Liam Manning, probably some heat directed at Ben Napper as well. And it will be a 2-week period really of soul searching and God knows what else really. So we mentioned the high stakes. That's the flip side of it, isn't it? That as Craig maps out, those type of conversations, those type of comments are going to become, rightly or wrongly, early or otherwise, more prevalent from Norwich City fans towards that head coach and that sporting director. Those are the high stakes that we're mapping out here.
Yes, and that's why, to go back to what I said at the start, it's interesting to me that Manning is now talking up results in the here and now, not process and then results will come as a byproduct of that. It's results. Also, what I also said about, you know, pressure, that the fact that he can now reasonably have questions bowled at him about, is he feeling pressure? Is he under pressure? That tells you the shift has already lurched into that territory. And we all know where that ends, and him more so than any of the rest of us. And also the questions it would then raise around Ben Napper and his judgment. If in short order, another head coach appointment that he not only sanctioned, but drove and led. You know, we interviewed Mark Attanasio on our podcast over the summer, and there was an anecdote within that hour or so chat where it was Ben Napper had said this was the only guy you need to sit down and have almost a final interview with. You know, he is our first, second, third, fourth choice, to paraphrase what Mark said. Well, that if we're rolling this on to a toxic outcome, then that's not going to reflect very well on Ben Napper, I would suggest. And, you know, the levels of change that would unleash and what that would mean for this season here and now, it's very hard to sort of crystal ball gaze, because, you know, that very much wasn't at the outset what the plan was. And but for me, it's the manner of a defeat. You know, if and maybe the fans want to push back on this, but if they go there and they play reasonably well, and, you know, as can happen in any game, but particularly a derby, it's decided by, you know, contentious refereeing decisions, poor luck, an untimely injury, a moment of brilliance from a player in blue. These things are all elements that aren't necessarily under Liam Manning's control. But what is under his control is sending his team out with a structure, with a purpose, with a tactical plan. And then all those other elements which he ad nauseum talks about, behaviours and mentality and mindset and bravery and resilience, all of those elements. If all of those factors are questioned at the end of this game, then effectively you're questioning Liam Manning. Because as he said after Wrexham, the team that he sees out on the pitch is supposed to be a reflection of him. And if they're so far short in all the key elements, character-wise but also footballing-wise, then that's a reflection on Liam Manning. And, you know, to be the head coach who is the first to lose an East Anglian derby in 16 years is a very heavy millstone around his neck, let's be honest, off the back of a very, very unconvincing start to this season at home. But even those away games we've talked about liberally, yes, the points have come, but they've been achieved in a manner which doesn't feel sustainable, certainly doesn't feel like a path to being genuine top six contenders, which is the bare minimum for this club.
Yeah, and you mentioned Liam Manning, and that's clearly where the focus always ends up, the head coach. You touched upon Ben Napper. Where would it again? We're talking about a very high stakes game that Norwich are playing on Sunday. Park the fact it's the East Anglian derby for a moment, but the fact it is probably makes all of this stuff feel more heightened. The focus, surely, in this kind of hypothetical situation that we are mapping out. And again, we've kind of spoken about the positive angle to this, where Norwich get a result and suddenly, you know, off they go. But if we continue down this thread, I mean, Ben Napper is also going to be under fire, isn't he? In terms of, like you say, the decision that around the head coaching decision, more questions about the recruitment, all of that becomes more intense and comes into focus a lot more, as we both said, Paddy, over a 2-week period where Norwich City don't have a game of championship football. None of this helps if they were to go there and get a bad result. So it would also come on scrutiny of him as well, wouldn't it?
Well, it has to, yeah. I mean, because they are interlinked, clearly. You know, Ben Napper chose Liam Manning to be Norwich's new head coach, as he chose Johannes Hoftorup to be Norwich's previous new head coach. If both those appointments have failed to work out in relatively quick order, then he is, in the terms of chain of command, he is the person where the book stops. You know, above him is obviously the ownership. But it's, again, very clear in not only the piece we did with Mark, but any touch point I've ever heard him that, and also when he references how they've operated with the Brewers for 17, 18 years, they are not micromanagers. They're not hands-on. They understand their limitation in terms of the sporting side, particularly football as opposed to baseball, soccer, if we want to use the transatlantic term, and that they don't get involved in the day-to-day. They entrust people they believe have the aptitude and the ability to do that day to day. And then if there's another case study that put before us in short order from this point that proves that decision was wrong, as it was the Torup decision, then it's very hard to see how Ben Napper continues in his post. Let's get it straight. But Ben Napper knows that. That wouldn't be something he needs to worry about or fear, because he knows that is the inevitable outcome. If Norwich is a footballing entity in terms of the overall direction of travel of the football club, the bit that he's directly responsible for, if that is failing and continuing to fail, then that's on him. So he knows that. As we said to him when we had the first of two touch points in the summer, I said, you know, the next one, you know, given how much you invested in terms of the Torup project and then pulled the plug on that, the next one you have to get right. Otherwise, it questions your judgment. It brings your judgment into doubt. Well, barely, what are we now, 4 months on from sort of Liam Manning's appointment? And, you know, I feel we're probably spending too much on this segment, Connor, if I'm honest, about, you know, what could happen in terms of the futures of these two individuals. Let's try and tip it more towards a positive and look at the upside. But will there be a negative reaction and will it be focused around those two individuals? Absolutely. But for me, to repeat what I said earlier, this weekend is only a make or breaker if they're so far off it, and they're so far off it in terms of football, but also the willingness to resist and the character. And because that would tell you that this head coach and this group of players haven't understood what it means to this fan base and haven't given absolutely everything. You know, you can get beat. There's a way to get beat. But surrendering in a game against Ipswich Town is, well, it's not acceptable, is it? So for me, you know, that's what's on the line here. It's the manner of how they go about the task. Yes, of course, you know, we all want them to maintain the 16 years of domination. But at the risk of repeating myself, if it was that they were simply up against a better team on the day, but they've given their all and there was signs again of something to move forward with, then I'll be interested to know what the fan base on here think. You know, would that be sufficient enough to sort of give him, you know, more opportunities down the line? For me, it probably should be, because to pull the plug 8-9 games in, it's less for me about pulling the plug. It's about what on earth comes next, who comes next, which levels of the football club need to change personnel. What does that mean in the here and now for this season? All of those questions are massive questions, because they're not the questions anybody felt would need to be answered before we barely ticked into October, let's be honest.
Yeah, and again, I know you kind of mentioned the debate that we've had there and the high stakes, but I mean, the fact that we're at this point, fork in the road at this stage, is crazy, really. But that's where Norwich City have got themselves to. And let's hope, obviously, we'll be doing a podcast after the game. Let's hope we are straying much more into you know, oh, couldn't this be the springboard? Couldn't this be the result that gets them going rather than the opposite end of the spectrum and having to speak a lot? I've probably got a lot of thoughts on all of that stuff, but I'll save it for that podcast and we'll see how we all feel on Sunday night, Monday morning. It feels to me, Paddy, if Norwich City, look, we've seen him do it away from home. They are going to have to absorb pressure and punches and defend well. That's been a theme of all of their away games, in fairness. It feels key to me. And look, this is something they did last time. They were very, very fortunate to do it because I remember Nathan Broadhead in particular having a really good opportunity and a handful of them. But they've got to stay in the game, haven't they, for as long as possible. But you've got to expect, given all of the things that you've spoken about, the motivation, an Ipswich Town team, an Ipswich Town coach, an Ipswich Town fan base who are going to smell blood very early doors because of this discussion that we're having around the mood and all of that stuff. Norwich, it feels like, probably are going to have to ride an early storm. And if they can do that, and if they can frustrate, then again, can you force the game into realms that we got it at Carrow Road last time around, where suddenly this record begins to weigh a little bit heavy, that the frustration begins to come? That is the objective for Norwich City at Portman Road in the early stages of that game on Sunday, it feels like to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll be intense. There's no doubt about it. I think the Blue Action crew are doing all the old greet, meet and greet again, aren't they? So, yeah, watch out for the flying beer cans. But for me, that's to be expected. You would be, which is, again, concerning, that it's almost we're going to have to let these players know what to expect. There's absolutely no quarter going to be asked or given. It is going to be hostile. It is going to be intense. It's going to be ferocious. And if they wilt in that environment, then you fear what could happen. And then within the microcosm of a game, yeah, if that came in the first 20 minutes, then the intensity from the home areas are only going to go up further if they've got something to sort of then get behind in terms of an opening goal or two. And equally, you know, that sense of we're in very deep water here, chaps. How do we navigate ourselves to, you know, the shallow end? So, yeah, there's absolutely no doubt that, and that's for me where probably McLean is massive, that if he is fit, that they can get him on the park, because I think they're going to need as much of that element as they can add to the mix. I don't think this is an occasion for, we just flashed up a question there about Jurasek. I think you do have to almost err on the side of a conservative approach, because certainly at the start of that game, because you don't want to be out of it before the game opens up. And the longer they're in it, as happened with the John Rowe game, and Norwich were actually went 2-1 up in that game, if we forget, despite Ipswich having far, far better in the first half, and then they equalised and didn't think a lot happened thereafter in the rest of that game. Possibly because, you know, don't underestimate that expectancy that's going to weigh heavy on McKenna and those players. Can they be, Manning, don't want to be the first one in 16 years, can they be the first Ipswich personnel in 16 years to get this over the line? And then I'm sure that'll create their own piece of folklore, you know, in terms of their standing within the modern Ipswich fan base. But all of that can weigh quite heavy. You know, if the finish line is so tantalisingly close, you know, if they get themselves in front. But obviously, if they're winning by a canter, then, you know, they'll coast in a free will. So, yeah, it goes without saying, you know, most games, certainly away from home, you've got to expect you're going to come under pressure. And as intense as it has felt at Coventry and Stoke particularly, that will pale, I'm sure, because you'll have the ferocity off the pitch as much as on the pitch to contend with at Portman Road. So, you know, maybe they've had some very good prep in terms of, you know, what might be facing them come the weekend. But your fear is that it cannot be a performance that is clinging on for dear life on the edge of their own box, hoping against hope to just get to the 90th minute full-time whistle. I think if it becomes that type of game, Ipswich will just relentlessly pound, pound, pound away. And I don't fear, my fear is that this group, as resilient as they've been away from home, I don't think they'd be able to keep with all that history building like a dam. You know, I just don't think they would be able to get the job done. So for me, they have to go there and show something with the ball that isn't simply stringing 10 behind it and hoping against hope that Ipswich have an off day in terms of attacking, as they did, let's be honest, at Portman Road 2 seasons ago.
And that was, yeah, that was going to be where I shift the next conversation, because we can sit here and we can talk about the need for them to be defensively resilient. And I think clearly, we're not, that's not any sort of cutting edge level of analysis. You look at the quality Ipswich have, particularly in attacking areas. They rested a lot of those guys in midweek as well. That's obvious. Norwich are going to have to go there and defend for portions of this game. But they also need to get out and get up the pitch, Paddy. And that is the element, particularly away from home. We did a whole podcast after Stoke highlighting their struggles. They were a bit better in terms of their intent and the areas in which the game was played in midweek against West Brom, without then obviously adding some cutting edge. And that's where I think people will be looking at the attacking makeup of that side and how it looks probably ahead of defensive four, midfield two, maybe of Mattson, and if it is Kenny McLean, but if it won't be, then you think it will be Mirko Topic. How do you formulate the four, the three, whatever it's going to be ahead of them? Jovan Mokama, Matej Jurasek, what options do you think Liam Manning should bring to the table to really try and hurt an Ipswich team who, particularly from set pieces and other elements, have shown some signs of weakness defensively this season?
Well, it's a tricky one. As I say, I just think with everything at stake, and we've had the debate, do you take Schwartau out on the left-hand side and put in Jurasek from the start? For me, it's a no-brainer in terms of if you want to be proactive and on the ball and carry that threat and have that quality in the final third. I thought it was interesting. Sam asked him about Schwartau yesterday and, you know, talked up, which is what you get with him, that consistency in terms of performance, wholehearted, committed, his running and his physical power. And that was probably midweek, the first time we saw one or two glimpses. It was that sort of when he got past his man, ran across the byline, cut it back in the first half, and Mark Condes has tested the keeper. But then Jurasek, in the space of about 10 minutes when he came on, he created two or three of those type of opportunities. I just think he clearly has more to his game in an offensive sense. Part of that equation is probably Mahovo. Mahovo is the natural inheritor of that left-back slot. I didn't get the sense from Liam yesterday he wanted to gamble by starting him on Sunday. So, but then, you know, if you went sort of Schwartau and Mahovo, also that's a very young left-hand side, and I'm sure Ipswich look to exploit that. So, as always, when Liam talks about selection, it's that blend, isn't it? You need to try and find a blend. But I just think underpinning his selection process over these next two or three days will be that they need to be in this game. They need to be in this game at 45. They need to be in it at 60, 75. And does that, without tipping too far towards you have the ball, try and break us down, because they'll need to carry a threat going the other way. But does it maybe lend more to Schwartau instead of Jurasek, McLean if he's fit, instead of, you know, Mattson maybe, or Topic? And even on the other side of the pitch, I mean, do you take a Cernach out and you go a Stacey in front of Fisher? Because you're looking for a bit, in theory, you know, not on the evidence of Callum Fisher last midweek against Illing Jr. for West Brom's goal. But in theory, you know, that might give you a bit more defensive ballast. Does even Medic come back into your thoughts? Because if it is the type of game where Ipswich will have a lot of the ball and you need to be strong across the width for your 18-yard box, it's not necessarily about spacing behind. Does he come back into it? So it's a difficult one. Three? Yeah, well, even that. Yeah, even that. But then does that not just almost concede that initiative to Ipswich? Does it become a five very quickly? Your two wing-backs get pinned back and then you're in that mode of we can't get out of our defensive third. And if that's majority of the 90 minutes is going to be that, then Ipswich will score, I'm sure of it, because of the quality they've got in attacking areas. So that is his challenge over these next few days. That for me, it's probably going to err on the side of conservative, certainly at the start of the game. But within that, they still need to carry a threat. They still need to get players in and around Sargent. They can't have him doing all of his work the other side of the halfway line, i.e. the defensive half. You know, he needs to be, where possible, carrying a threat the other way. And to do that, they're going to have to connect far better than they have done away from home, kind of the middle and the final third. We saw at Stoke the gaps, the distances between these players. And it's just that big ball up to Mokama and play off seconds. I don't think that is going to be a policy. It's good because you're just going to end up recycling it back to Ipswich. And we saw with McKenna two seasons ago, they're very comfortable, very good rotations in the middle of the park, very fluid approach in possession. The crux of this game is trying to deny Ipswich the amounts of possession that if they get, they will be able to unlock the attacking players they've got.
Yeah, and like I said, we spoke about this a bit on the podcast last week, but Josh Sargent and getting him into the game, those elements, those numbers, those stats all have to change. It was just 15 touches again against West Brom in midweek. Only two of those came in the attacking penalty area. He had two in the defensive penalty area. I mean, you look at the numbers, really, the most he's had in the final third in the last four games is 11 touches, and that was against Wrexham. Then you drop into to nine that he had against Stoke in the final third. He had five against Coventry. These are all numbers that Norwich City are going to have to change. And of course, it's about the quality of the touches that he has. Look, if Norwich get him in the box once, he scores once and Norwich win 1-0, happy days. But it's just about, I guess, having that transitional ability to go and hurt Ipswich, and that ability to get up the pitch. All of that needs to change. And like we say, Paddy, because you look at this team, and I think it's a fair point in terms, and this is a point that's been raised elsewhere, who's the match winner? Who's the one that's going to grab this? You look at Josh Sargent, don't you? Probably is your start and end point in that discussion.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking of the Blackburn second goal where he's kind of just picked it up, drove, and then thumped it into the top corner. I mean, he can do that. But the majority, I'm sure, if you went back and looked at his goals in green and yellow, are service. You know, he needs balls played into him. He needs balls coming across the box. He needs to use his pace into the channels. And if he gets isolated and he's not getting that, as we've seen in his most recent games, then it's very hard for even him, with his reputation and status amongst Championship number nines, to affect the play. And that's why I thought, you know, to be fair, Marc Condes was a step forward in that direction. Concerns me that he is another who's managing this ongoing hip issue, and you know, the fact that he only went 60-65 minutes midweek, can he go again in close proximity? Because he has got that ability to intelligently move between the lines between midfield and attack, look for the pockets of space, link players in and around Sargent, but also with Sargent as well. So yeah, for me, Marc Condes has to start the game, I think, because if I look beyond him, I don't know what other options they've got to try and avoid. If it becomes Ipswich dominating possession, dominating territory, then a very isolated figure in Josh Sargent, which, as you rightly say, Connor, given you're looking for who could decide this game in a John Rowe-esque fashion, you look at him and I don't look too far beyond him, if I'm honest. So in other words, you need to maximise the potential you've got with him in this team by getting the players in and around him and getting the right service in and around him as well. Not what we've seen certainly in Coventry, in Stoke, and maybe even to a degree Wrexham, which he looks to me an increasingly frustrated figure, that he's in a side that isn't at the moment set up to maximise what he could offer at this level.
Without, we're running the risk of going through all of the year 11 here. Jovan Mokama, do you bring him back in for this game with the qualities that he has?
I haven't really thought too much about it, sort of the 1-11, if I'm honest. I mean, now it's a big game. It's a big game for such a young, raw, inexperienced player from a start. Again, it flows into me the conservative element of it. You know, I think You probably err on the side of Cernach, just because, not necessarily, you know, he's that more experienced, but he's certainly got a body of Championship experience to draw on. I agree with Manning. I thought that was a step forward from him midweek. Again, low bar that he's coming from, but he looked a bit more mobile, a bit more physical, a bit more willing to engage defenders and battle. He's going to need all of those attributes alongside Sargent at Portman Road. So, no, I don't think I would take a lad who was playing at Lincoln in the summer and, albeit in a couple of small cameos, has shown he's got something about him, but a hell of a world of difference from coming on against Wrexham or starting against Stoke and throwing him in at Portman Road. So, no, I think top end of the pitch, I'd probably be retaining Cernach for this one in and around Sargent, with Marc Condes in there as well.
We're going to be live for the next 10 minutes or so. We are coming up to, unfortunately, and I'm going to desperately try and avoid it, but predictions time. So, please, again, if you're watching live on Facebook, YouTube, or on X, get them down below. I'd like to hear them. If you want to add some reasoning behind that, feel free to do it, and we'll obviously flash them up and talk about them as we go. But Paddy, I wanted to start the end in terms of what an incredible run this has been. I don't want to talk about it in past tense because it's still ongoing, but in present tense, to go 16 years against any opponent is remarkable, is incredible. To do it in a game of this magnitude with the pressure that is on it, obviously started in that unbelievable season really that Norwich had under Paul Lambert, with the 4-1 Grant Holt hat trick and obviously the 5-1 at Portman Road. It's been a fixture with so many positive memories from a yellow and green perspective in it. Again, I don't want to reflect on it as if it's gone and it's done, because it definitely isn't, and we know what derby games can bring and do, as it will on Sunday. But the fact that Norwich have got it this far is pretty remarkable, really, isn't it? In a game between two rivals, it's very rare you see that in many of the other rivalries across this country and beyond.
I mean, it'd be quite interesting somebody to do some analysis on that. You know, those traditional derbies, what sort of unbeaten run one side or one protagonist has managed over another. It must be right up there, I would imagine. Obviously not always in the same league in those 16 years, of course, but whenever they have met, for Norwich to stay the right side of it, and we can all remember the near misses, you know, the Tim Closer one principally. As I say, the Portman Road game two seasons ago, although, you know, once they'd weathered that initial sort of surge, then they were always in that game. For me personally, I mean, I'll never forget the Lambert win, 5-1, I think it was, towards the back end of that promotion winning season at Portman Road. I mean, that was, I remember being pitch side after the game. It was a midweek game. It was a Thursday night game, wasn't it? Very unusually. And it felt, and I'm not exaggerating, but from that away end, it had obviously been kept in. And as you can imagine, we're high on life. It was like there was an electricity. I've never really experienced that before inside a stadium, if I'm honest, because of what it meant to put five past your rivals on their own patch. I mean, can you imagine that from a fan experience, being in that away end that night in 2011, as it was? And then, of course, the other one that stands out is the first leg of the playoff semi-final. Those two legs, 2014-15 season, where, you know, Town clearly thought that was going to be the time. And I remember, you know, that you could sense the butterflies, everybody inside that stadium, probably press included, if I'm honest, before that game, because it was like the trepidation. This was double jeopardy and then some, because it was Wembley and it was Premier League, potentially, as it gloriously turned out to be for Norwich. So all of those experiences wrapped around these 16 years, this is why this game means so much, because it's like unlike any other game. And, We'll see. You know, my fear is it probably will be 16 and out if we're going to sort of tip over now to predictions, because I just feel that their desperation tinged with Norwich being so much in transition. They missed their opportunity for McKenna anyway two seasons ago.
And, you're not going to do it, are you? You're not going to go there.
I do think it'll be a Town win, if I'm honest, because it's hard to argue against it, isn't it? Now, given our quality in predicting, that basically means it won't be a Town win. So there's a bit of psychosomatic on there. Yeah.
Like, how you've done that. Yeah.
So I can't lose then. I can say, oh, well, I predicted that. Or, you know, yet again, we've got it spectacularly wrong. But I just think with this one, you know, if it had been a bit better at Carr Road, not necessarily like winning four out of these five games, but, you know, something radically different to what has been before. If Chris Garden had stayed fit and him and Sargent had started to build on those really positive signs, then you'd feel a lot more confident going into this in game. But, you know, what that tells you over the last 16 years is very foolish to make predictions, really, because I don't think even the most ardent Norwich fan, if April 2009 was their last win, wasn't it? Maybe May 2009, you could have sat down a Norwich fan and said, don't worry, that's the last defeat you'll get in this fixture until 2025. I don't think too many would have gone for that. So, you know, that just tells you that it's possible that they can go there and get a result, but I fear that they won't. And for me, you know, maybe it's because I'm not coming at this with the green and yellow in my veins. It's not as big as what does that mean for this season? What does it mean for Liam Manning? What does it mean for Ben Napper? What does it mean moving forward now? As bad as this would feel, as disappointing as it would feel, as not wanting to sort of take your head off the bed and come out from underneath the pillows on Monday morning and go to work, certainly if you work in a business around this part of the world where there's Ipswich colleagues and you know what's coming, all of those elements, fine. But moving forward, yeah, well, I wouldn't necessarily say 3-0, if I'm honest. I was thinking more like 2-1 maybe, but it would be for me, if it was a Portman Road defeat, what goes next and what comes next and how quickly that turns. Because if not, the bigger concern is what it means for the season. Less losing out, because as we all know, if it goes against them this weekend, we'll see them in Norfolk early in 26, and that's an opportunity to at least level off the slate for this particular season. And then it'd be one defeat in 17 years. I'd take that. You, Connor?
I think we'd all take that. Yeah, I think if you offered most people of a yellow and green persuasion a point and a draw now and that record continuing, I think most people would sign up to that. Yeah, this is hard, isn't it? I think it's the old heart versus head, isn't it? And I think when I use my head and I try and apply logic to it, the form of the two clubs, where they're both at in terms of their current cycle, how they've performed this season. And Ipswich, by the way, haven't been sensational. They're not towards the top end of the championship at this stage. I think they probably will end the campaign a lot significantly closer to it than they are now. I'm finding it difficult to formulate an argument or a route for Norwich City to win this game beyond Ipswich not being at their best and maybe Norwich just getting some luck or a set piece or something, which, again, you look at Ipswich, I think that's a real opportunity for Norwich this weekend. If they can get set pieces, corners, we know long throw-ins they've utilised as well. That's a real route for them to get a result and whatnot. And like you say, if you apply logic to this, you throw in the fact it's a team. And look, even if this wasn't an East Anglian derby, let's say it was Southampton away, it was Leicester away this weekend, one of those teams that have come down from the Premier League, it was always going to be very, very difficult. So that's a long-winded way of showing my working as to why I'm probably with you in saying that I'm struggling to find a way to think of Norwich City winning this game. And I think it probably will be Ipswich's time. And I think if you're of a blue and white persuasion, if Ipswich Town can't get one over Norwich at this stage, you would begin to wonder when this run ever would end, to be honest, because this is probably the most brittle, the most fragile that Norwich City have been heading into one of these games. That being said, and as we said somewhere in this show, you and Roberts mapped out a way that Norwich does get a result and that logic, you know, maybe doesn't apply to this fixture, all of the realms that comes into it. Norwich have to take heart from their away form and what they've done on the road. I don't think they've played a team that's anywhere near Ipswich's quality in terms of individually or as a collective. There are some signs that Ipswich are beginning to get things going at Portman Road as well. I think they've won all of their last three games there, maybe two games there. So this is going to be difficult. So on that basis, I'm going to join you. I'm going to go 2-1. I think Norwich will score. But I think Ipswich may edge it, and obviously, in my heart, I hope it that very, very much that outcome doesn't happen, and Norwich City can find something, anything to come away with this game from, because it would just change the mood in such a way that could really, hopefully, have an impact. And we will deal with where they're at in terms of performance levels and whatnot after that, and in the games to come. So there we go. It's. Get yourself in the brace position, isn't it, for this one? And let's hope Charlie, who's just commented this one at the bottom, 0-1, Norwich win, Sargent with the goal. To be honest, anyone with the goal would be great. Here we go then, Paddy, 48 hours to go on this one. It's going to be a big weekend.
Strap in. Yeah, strap in. That's what we all live for. We don't. Who wants to turn up every week knowing what the outcome's going to be and, you know, scoring lots of goals and keeping clean sheets? No, you want the jeopardy. You want, you know, the highs or the lows, and they'll certainly be. Well, I suppose even a draw might be viewed as a high in the context of what this previous however long we've been on an hour has felt like, which is a little bit too negative. So maybe we should apologise. But you know, that kind of feels where we're at from a Norwich perspective. But final word, 90 minutes at Portman Road can change this season, no doubt about it.
Let's hope it does in a positive sense. Pinkin.com, the place to go, not just for the rest of today. As Paddy says, there's something coming from a yellow and green perspective down the track that is going to be worth keeping an eye out for later on, we think, probably this afternoon. And then it will be all full steam ahead to the derby on Sunday. We will be at Portman Road. We'll have the team news. We'll have all your coverage, analysis and reaction to that game as well. And hopefully, and fallout or jubilation, however it ends up, for those of a yellow and green persuasion. We will see you on the other side. Thank you very much for joining us. Try and enjoy your Saturday if you can, and get yourself ready for that trip to Suffolk on Sunday. See you then.